Jeremy Chase Israel. I'm the member relations manager here at NICWA in Portland, Oregon. Thank you again for joining us today for the NICWA listening session on promoting social justice for tribal children and families, perspectives on redesigning child welfare. Today's listening session is, you know, partially about, you know, sending out some information, but we also want to hear from you. So there's going to be a number of opportunities to share your feedback, share your thoughts. There's going to be some polls. So we really want to hear from constituents about this topic and to have some engagement. So if you have any questions that come up during the webinar, please feel free to chat me directly. You can select my name in the chat feature and message me, and I'll do my best to respond to everybody as quickly as possible. You can also use the raise hand feature to show that you need some help or some support. So please take advantage of those features. And then without any further ado, I'm going to be introducing the two presenters for today. So first off, we are joined by David Simmons, who is the Director of Government Affairs and Advocacy at NICWA, and Gil V. Hill, President of the NICWA Board and Executive Director of 8 Northern Indian Pueblos Council. So thank you, Gil, and thank you, David, for being here today.
Go ahead, Gil.
Thank you, Jeremy and David. Good afternoon to all of you, or good morning to wherever your time zone you are in. But first of all, as president of NICWA, I want to welcome you to our listening session today to discuss and hear from Indian Country on your perspectives regarding the redesign of child welfare system. This is not a new topic for Indian Country, of course. We have been fighting the efforts of the federal and state policies and agencies to remove our children from their homes and communities for many generations. In our community, the federal government used the boarding school system to forcibly remove and assimilate our children. And we were the first population to experience former efforts to involuntarily place our children outside their cultural and communities via the Indian Adoption Project in the 1950s. Later, we learned that over 25% of our children had been removed and placed in foster care, primarily with non-Indian families and with questionable rationale. The Indian Child Welfare Act was a direct response to the social injustices inflicted upon our families and our communities. You might say ICWA was the first federal law specifically designed to address racial injustice in this country. The legislative history provides us with a deeper understanding of how institutional racism shaped and the harmful federal and state responses to our real needs of our family. Even today, we regularly see reports of disappropriation, placement of our children in state foster care system, and the struggles our families have to get basic services that respond to their needs. There is good news. More and more states and tribes are joining together to develop agreements, pass laws, providing training, and share resources. This collaboration efforts and investment are creating new models and collaboration and services. Here in New Mexico, we're working on establishing a legislation for the Indian Child Welfare, and we're using actually the state Children and Youth and Families Department, CYFD, beginning that process. So we're engaging the tribal leadership here to join us in developing the legislation that we'll be introducing this coming next year legislative session. So here in New Mexico, we've been working hard in doing that. The key to success in these efforts is tribes must be the leaders of this work, and the goal must be to decolonize child welfare. We have plenty of evidence that colonization does not work in any child welfare system. So we must insist that the approaches of the colonizers be eliminated when working with our children and families. Today, with increasing cries from social justice in law enforcement, we see child welfare leaders and advocates are beginning to explore questions about the injustice within the system. NICWA is participating in some of these conversations, does not want to assume we understand what Indian Country needs or wants from that process. Today, we are hoping you will be able to help us start this conversation. This will not be our only conversation with you, and we want you to know that we will be coming back to you again for further discussion. This is a sensitive and critical important work that we want to make sure we were serving your needs appropriately. And again, like I said, we need to continue to be united today because of what's going on in the country. And all of you can see what's happening because our people has been subjected to these longer than any other organizations have been. So at NICWA, we're asking for your help and helping us design and giving us your input so that we can meet your needs at the local level. So again, thank you for allowing me to be here and do the welcome on behalf of my National Child Welfare Association board members. David?
Thank you, President Vigil, for that welcome and your remarks. As you heard President Vigil say, that this is nothing new. This work to redesign child welfare has been going on in Indian Country, around the country, for quite some time. But the work, the discussion that's happening right now and has been happening basically since early 2020 has put a new spotlight on this idea of defunding, changing, redesigning child welfare in a way that we haven't seen for many, many years. So at NICWA, while we're helping participate, we're listening to some of those discussions. We want to make sure that whatever we provide in terms of information or support is in alignment with what Indian Country thinks is the best perspective and the best strategy. So this is really the start of that work on NICWA's part to make sure that our constituents and our members have a voice in this. And we want to explore some of your perspectives. We want to understand some of what your experiences are. And we certainly want to understand how we can best work with you in this. So on this slide, you'll see that we have some goals for the session. So the first is we're going to provide a little bit of background and some of the different systems change discussions that are happening in the field of child welfare right now. We're going to share a little bit about what NICWA's work historically has been to promote redesign in child welfare. And then we're going to open up the floor and we're going to have a session where we're just going to open for the most of the time, where we're going to be asking you some questions. We have some polls, as Jeremy said, where we want to get your perspective. And so I'll walk you through on how we're going to do that when we get to that part. I'm going to start with just sharing a little bit about some of the child welfare redesign conversations that are happening. You probably have heard a little bit about some of those. You might have gotten emails or been at a conference presentation, a virtual conference presentation. A number of different groups are engaged in this. But the one thing is that sometimes it's not easy to kind of differentiate what are the different movements or different conversations, what are their goals and what are they trying to do. So I want to share with you a few different ones. So there's a real continuum here. So at sort of one far end of the continuum, we've got people who are saying that we want to just be focused on how to better implement current policies, maybe practices within the current system. So they're really kind of trying to do more nuanced changes around the edges. So it's not real substantive reform. And then we've got other groups closer, maybe in the middle, who are looking at how they can change the policy to actually change the system. So they want to influence the system through policy development and changing the location of resources too. So community-based is a big part of this. And then there are other groups that are kind of more to the other side of this. And a couple of them, one is called UPEND. The Center for Study of Social Policy is sponsoring a lot of these discussions. There are some Native voices in those conversations and some of their presentations. They've said they want to reach out to Indian Country, but we don't know what that's going to look like quite yet. But when they say they want to abolish the current system, they're talking about dismantling the system and replacing intrusive state intervention. So they're talking about safety and protection of children rests with families and communities first. They think there should be an expansion of critical safety net programs to help address poverty and housing and other issues. They talk about having a a set amount, a child allowance that costs. So if you have a certain number of children in your home, you would be getting a certain amount of funding on a regular basis just to help provide for the care. So they're looking at all families have needs in this area. They're also talking about more use of informal kinship care, not formal like the child welfare system does, but informal kinship care and support for that. And then the ending of congregate care, group care, group homes, except for the most isolated instances where there's no really other opportunity for treatment for certain children or youth or families. And then they've also, as part of their principles, they've borrowed from ICWA the active efforts there. They recognize active efforts as an important part of this work, and they recognize that reasonable efforts has failed them, failed many families in this, and so they're advocating that active efforts be the standard for all children and families, not just tribal children and families. And they want to also end termination of parental rights that relies on arbitrary timelines. So they're not advocating for the end of termination of parental rights, but at least only not using it, basing it on how long somebody's been in care, for instance. Another group, which is sort of a private public, so it's sponsored by some federal agencies like the Children's Bureau, and it's also Casey Family Programs and some others are involved, Annie E. Casey Foundation. They're calling their initiative Thriving Families, Safe Children. So they want to reinvent child welfare to be more proactive and less reactive. So they're talking about new prevention strategies, getting to families earlier so that they don't get into crisis and end up having their children removed. So they want to create more equity across the system for all children and families who are served. They don't say exactly how that would work, but the equity is a big part of their focus. They want to break the cycles of trauma and poverty. So they're talking about partnering, creating new partnerships, real partnerships between different federal agencies, state agencies, and tribes in relationship to trying to address those two issues. And then they want to reduce removals. And they believe that by being more prevention oriented, more proactive, they can do that. And then they also want to promote additional community-based supports as make it easier for community, from people in the community to access services and support. And another group has talked about actually completely, almost like defunding, I would call it. I don't know if they have a name for it, but defunding child welfare and taking all of the funds from child welfare, that would be federal funds, I imagine some of the state funds too, and then essentially allowing parents to get a stipend and letting them purchase services as they want. So they're opening it up and really empowering parents to be the ones who are selecting services. I haven't heard how they would actually, I don't know if they have a plan on how the services would be organized so that parents could know how to purchase those and get those services, or how they would deal with more kind of immediate child safety issues. But the idea is that this system, current system, has not worked, and that we really need to take it out of the hands of governments and put it in the hands of families. So those are a couple of the different kind of movements are out there. And there are probably other discussions. Child Welfare League of America is also having discussions about this as well, and are focused certainly on prevention too. But I think it's important to recognize that many of the at least initial conversations don't fit neatly into any of sort of the tribal history and concerns and thinking around child welfare, the experience of Native people and child welfare. So a couple of examples where I think questions still exist, and I think only Indian country can really probably provide that information, is many of these proposals are focused on and looking at this through a race equity lens. So they're looking at it through racial inequality and racial justice. So while that might work for Native people in some instances, it doesn't address the issues of the political status of Native people either, and tribes as well. One of the things I think about is, so how would the Indian Child Welfare Act look? How would its protections be in place in a new system that was maybe not focused on state intervention and didn't have a role there? Or how would it look for tribes in those kind of situations too. So a lot of questions there. Another thing is that the idea of equity and funding, and a lot of, I think, the sort of the maybe not just unspoken, but spoken assumption is that if we're defunding a lot of the federal and state role in child welfare, the assumption is those funds are going to be then moved to provide more community supports. So how does that work for tribes who have such have had so little funding? They are sovereign governments, so they do fund themselves, so they do have those services, and they do receive funds like states. So if those funds were moved away, what would it look like for tribes? Because many tribes, as one person said, it's hard to defund a government when the government didn't have funds to begin with. So that's another question there. And of course, the question, and the only way to answer these questions is that we have to have tribal voices be part of the movement. And I think this is because of how important this is. It can't just be even organizations like the National Congress of American Indians or Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians or NICWA. We have to have broader, more expansive, more inclusive voices, diverse voices from Indian country to be part of the movement. And so as we've talked about many times before, when we're thinking about tribal consultation, we don't mean just some tribes, we mean all tribes and all communities. So that's another part of this, I think, some of the questions that we have that we're trying to get answers to as we kind of move forward. And we hope that you can help us think about these as well. So as Gil said, this is not new work in Indian country, and it's definitely not new work for NICWA. We've been working on redesigning child welfare for a long time. Our principles, our values, our practice model all come from a place of the recognition of inherent tribal sovereignty and the right to self-determination, both for tribal communities collectively, but also Native people individually. And the role of culture, values, traditions, and belief has to be a part of that. It can't be the adoption of a one-size-fits-all redesign that is then put onto tribes and tribal communities. So we have to remember that. And of course, our work has always been about recognizing that we serve tribes, we are not speaking for tribes. And so in our work, we need to make sure that we're having those conversations and make sure that we're on the right side of what tribes and tribal communities are asking for. In addition to that, our work that we do day to day, we've done a lot of advocacy, obviously since the 80s to improve mostly federal policy, but also state policy in some cases. We've worked on state Indian Child Welfare Act legislation in a number of states. We've advocated for changes in policy to, for instance, giving tribes the right to have access to the Title IV-E program from the Fostering Connections Act in 2008. We've moved to also, of course, protect the Indian Child Welfare Act and even try to enhance it and improve it over the years too. So our policy advocacy is about the understanding that tribes are really in the best position to be serving Native children and families, and whatever we can do to support that capacity is where we should go. And that includes better practices too. So a lot of times what we see is that whether it's state agencies or private agencies, their practices don't always reflect the needs of tribal children and tribal families. And their relationships sometimes are where they need to be. So we've done a lot of work to help support through our own training and also just technical assistance, the way helping tribes be able to further those relationships and support additional practices, cultural practices, even for children who are not in tribal systems. And of course, lastly, we are also about decolonization. We understand very clearly that colonization has removed and disrupted tribal governance and tribal nations' ability to develop programs in their own image. And decolonizing child welfare is really about trying to restore indigenous thinking and indigenous ways to programs like child welfare. And so whenever we're doing work in tribal communities by request, we come with that kind of perspective that we're trying to help tribes as they're trying to decolonize their child welfare systems. And the last thing I would say about our work is that we have been greatly influenced by the Touchstones of Hope. It's an Indigenous guide to truth and reconciliation and child welfare that's been in place probably since the early 2000s. And it came out of some First Nations efforts in Canada, but also has been utilized in the United States more recently by tribes in Maine who put together a Truth and Reconciliation Commission there. And the Touchstones of Hope are based on some different principles. They've got five principles. And one is that tribal nations, tribal people have the right to self-determination and essentially create life and programs and supports community life in their own vision. Culture and language have to be part of that. They have to be reflected in everything. It isn't that culture or language is okay some places and it doesn't need it out. It has to be completely throughout the whole system and process. And holistic approach means looking at the things that tribes have used for many years, the extended family networks and natural helping systems in their communities that have helped protect children for many, many generations, and how those holistic approaches look at not just the immediate needs of Native people, but also some of the structural barriers they experience in through poverty and inadequate housing and education, to also be able to develop approaches that provide for a strong interdependent lifestyle within tribal values and culture. And then structural interventions too, because we can't really change child welfare if we don't change the things that families don't have a lot of ability to change on their own. If you're living in poverty, you can't just get up one day and say, I'm gonna change that. If you have inadequate housing or inadequate transportation, food supplies, you can't change that all by yourself. And too often the child welfare systems have looked at structural issues and used those as a way to bring children and families into the child welfare system, and then basically putting the onus on them to change things which they really can't change on their own. There needs to be greater systems change there. And the last principle has to do with non-discrimination. So there has to be equity. There cannot be discrimination based on race or community level or geographic location. It has to be equitable. And when we talk about tribal governmental status, I'm always reminded that while the federal government provides about $14 billion every year to states for child welfare services, tribes get less than 0.5% of that funding to be able to provide for their own services. So obviously there's not equity in a system that is funded that way. And in Touchstones, the four different phases that you can find, and there's also here at the bottom, you can see a link to help you learn more about it, is truth-telling, acknowledging, restoring, and relating. So I'm not gonna take up too much more time about this, but I would encourage you to go look at this, and this will give you an idea of sort of some of the principles and experience that we've had that have helped inform a lot of our work. So now I wanna move to our conversation with you. And I'm gonna, since we have a lot of people, I think we almost have 200 people on the call today. Unfortunately, we're not gonna probably be able to open up the mics and just have that kind of free-flowing conversation we would have if we were in person. So what we're gonna do is some adaptation here. We've got some questions that we'd like, and some polls that we'd like to ask you to respond to. We'd like everyone to please record your responses in the chat box. And the chat box in Zoom is right down there at the bottom. There should be like a menu bar, and you'll see that it says polls, and then it will say chat right next to that, I believe. And as we go through the questions, we'll share highlights from the polls. You'll see that. And we'll also, from some of the question responses in the chat box. And we may ask some clarifying questions at points too, different points. But we do wanna make sure that we get an opportunity to hear from everyone. So All of your responses are needed. And I want to tell you that the information that you're sharing with us today we're going to have our board meeting next week with our board of directors, and we're going to be sharing this information with them. And we're going to be asking them, this is not identifying information. We're just going to be sharing it kind of anonymously to give them some idea of what in this conversation, what our constituents and members thought of child welfare redesign and maybe what NICWA's role should be. So at least beginning that conversation. So, and as Jeremy had said earlier, when you go to put your response in the chat box, there's a little place right above where you put your response. It gives you some choices, like a little down arrow, and it just please select the option that says all panelists and attendees. That way everybody can see it. If you just select panelists, not everybody will be able to see it. And of course, we want all of you to be able to see your posts as well. So we're going to start a little icebreaker. We're going to start with a poll, and I'm going to ask Jeremy to put up our first poll now, and I'm going to stop the screen sharing here. So everybody can fill this out. So what is your favorite fall activity? I'm going to take a minute here while people are filling it out. I can see there's a lot of responses. We've already had over 50 now. I know there's a lot of different things I like to do in the fall. Raking leaves is probably not the first one on the list, but a number of these other ones are things that I like to do as well. Gil, I'm guessing you have some favorite fall activities as well. Okay, how are we doing there? Okay. Now here, look at we've got, looks like sitting by the fire is number one. Oh no, looking at the fall colors is number one. And I have lots of ways to do that. And then sitting by the fire and cooking fall dishes are all right in there. And a few of us put in hunting or fishing too. And only 1% said raking leaves. So,
that was me.
that was probably me too. I have to do that this weekend. So thank you everybody for sharing your responses to our first poll. So our first question is going to be, what do you see, and Jeremy's going to write this in the chat box so you can actually look at it. What do you see as the most important supports that help tribal families keep their children safe? So I'll say that again. What do you see as the most important supports that help tribal families keep their children safe? So go ahead and record your response in the chat box. I'll give you a couple minutes to do that. Looks like we're having a lot of people filling out the chat box. A lot of people talking about family, kinship care, family connections. Definitely family is a big theme. Culture and language, elders, local traditions. Oh, effective communication, that's a good one. Communal values, cultural identity connections, community connections. Intervention, grandparents and family prevention, a lot of family responses. Mentors, somebody brought in mentors. Excellent. Family meetings, okay. Ceremony, listening, deep listening to the stories of people, families, culture, dance, and families, grandparents, absolutely. And spiritual connections, talking circles, cultural preservation, aunties, can't forget aunties, peacemaking, another response too. Excellent. Excellent. Oh, and then being trauma-informed, responses that focus on trauma and that are trauma-informed, and then decolonization, just plain and simple decolonization. Okay. So, like, Jeremy, do we have any, some others still putting in? We've got some more.
Seems like that's most of it.
Most of it, okay. So we'll move to our second question here. It's similar, but it's a little bit the other side of the coin here. So what do you see as the greatest threats or barriers to tribal families' ability to keep their children safe? So the question is, what do you see as the greatest threats or barriers for tribal families' ability to keep their children safe? White supremacy, I see. Institutional racism, lack of resources, substance abuse, access to resources, a number of substance abuse, lack of healing, intergenerational trauma, not being able to heal from the trauma, too many rules in child welfare, okay? Tribal resources, ignoring dads, lack of culture, separating children from families, lack of education, systems not created for and by the people, lack of self-love, intergenerational grief and loss, lack of parenting education, in counties who do not abide by equal regulations, institutional racism, unresponsive systems, one size fits all ideas, disregarding local assets and knowledge. Yes. Okay. And then just not utilizing family supports, families not having supports that they need. Misunderstandings about those supports, intergenerational grief and trauma, no opportunity to heal, and recognition of tribal laws, customs, beliefs, religion, and spirituality. Maybe that's not recognition of those. Fear and shame. Okay. No native foster homes in urban areas and all the hoops that they need to go through to become foster families. Lack of representation, poverty. Certainly the number of structural barriers are being listed here. You know, like we mentioned before, structural barriers are things that families on their own can't change. They don't have the power to do that. They need assistance to do that, and the system needs to be responsive. More about lack of community support. Seems like there's a real theme here about having resources in the community, maybe more accessible. Oppression and moving to liberation, empowerment, education, housing. I see a lot of themes here around structural barriers. Okay. All right, let's, and then denial. This is a good one. Community of denial of systemic barriers about extended family system. Glad somebody mentioned that one too. Sometimes in the communities we have, the community hasn't quite resolved the question about how they see the issues too. Community ownership is real important when you're trying to, in the creation of solutions. All right, we have, I'm gonna ask Jeremy to put up our second poll. Jeremy, if you could do that for us. So if ICWL were fully implemented and complied with, would that be enough to ensure at-risk tribal families got the support they needed? So if ICWL was fully implemented and complied with, would that be enough? You have to kind of ask, the question's asking you, obviously, to kind of think about, imagine a world where there was full compliance and implementation, which we don't have right now, of course. No, okay. We have a lot of people saying, not too many people saying yes, but a lot of people saying that they don't believe that would be enough. And a good number also saying they're not quite sure. And one person wrote in, it takes more than one entity. You still need family support, aftercare, mentorship, other services. Yeah. One person writes in, it would be a good place to start. I agree with that, absolutely. Need more context to respond in the affirmative. Okay. It's hard to know what that would look like, right? So that's part of the trickiness, I guess, of the question a little bit. No, one person said no, because there's still racism bias. That's interesting. So here's the poll results. So we had 75% said that they didn't think that would be enough. So it's a foundation, but not enough services in the community. So I'm going to ask a follow-up question. And that question is, other than ICWA, go ahead and put in some of the things you think are needed to help support what ICWA is trying to achieve. And I've got some people have already started to do that. Go ahead and put in some out. So you've got full implementation of ICWA, but what else is needed? What else is needed? Parent mentors. I see one person talking about that. Housing, financial resources, healing. Representation. I'm going to guess that means maybe different kinds of representation or advocacy, maybe even the courts. We get a number of families that call us during the year asking for some information about ICWA and Kate, and they're usually in a child welfare case themselves. And one of the things that we find quite often is that people don't get good legal representation in court. They're not finding attorneys who have the background in ICWA or even family law to give them that kind of representation. Stronger connections between ICWA and state agencies. Yeah, we need more of that for sure. More support and advocacy for parents. There's some real themes here, obviously, right? Putting a white system into operation in tribes isn't distinctly tribal system. No, it's not. That's not a decolonized system. Alternative peacemaking responsibilities. Good. Excellent. A lot of excellent ideas here. All these are excellent ideas. More funding research, cooperative responses, and recognition of the impact of trauma. I hear a lot of people, of course, now saying we need to have a trauma-informed child welfare system, but what does that really mean? How does that look like? And, you know, recognition of trauma generally or recognition of trauma more specifically? I think it needs to be more specifically. Drug courts, other restorative justice options, getting beyond trauma education for families too, financial incentives for parents and families, as opposed to paying foster care. The follow-up question was asking what, so if we did have full ICWA compliance and it's not enough, what else would families need, Native families need to really have a really effective child welfare system? Oh, there's some people said that they're having they feel like there's training out there, but unfortunately it's not getting into practice. So that's interesting. Compassion, I see that, compassionate responses. And defining trauma-informed care for each family individually, okay? And believing that Native communities and families can take care of their children, that non-Native agencies need to understand and believe that. Equitraining services too. All right. Resource centers for excellent courts. More tribal resources. That's what I'm seeing. Tribal family resources, tribal government resources. Great. I'm going to move to our next poll. And Jeremy, could you pull that poll up, please? It's a little bit, I'm going to read this a couple times. This is a little bit of a long question, but hopefully you'll understand what we're trying to get at. Do you think pursuing child welfare redesign through a race equity lens adequately addresses tribal concerns regarding child welfare system injustices? So this is, you know, so in a race equity lens is where you're trying to create equity among different racial groups. And so equity is different than equality. So I can say I have equal access to a service is different than say I have equitable access. So equitable means I have access on my terms and I can use it and within my circumstances. Equal just means everybody has access, but maybe or maybe not, you'll be able to get that. So race equity is looking at child welfare redesign through this lens of different racial categories of and populations. So comparing the differences. Looks like we've got about 50% are saying, no, it's not sufficient to just use a race equity lens. We've got about a third, a little over a third that are saying they're not completely sure. And then we've got about 17%, 15, 16% that are saying that they think it might be enough to look at it from there. Yeah, so one person says it's a start, but you know, but tribal sovereignty needs to be recognized, the political status of Native people. So it needs to include sovereignty and self-determination. And we recognize that like laws like the Indian Child Welfare Act, for instance, are not based on Native children or family members part of a racial classification. It's based on their members, political status, citizens of tribal nations. So that's why that's a big distinction there, of course. Okay, now the poll results. It looks like about 50% that said that they don't think race equity is sufficient. And it's not to say, and then we've got about 36% said they're not sure and 14% said yes. It's not, and this is one of the questions that we have as an organization about some of the movements that we're seeing coming forward, some of the conversations, how is tribal sovereignty going to be part of that discussion? And certainly part of the solutions too. Yeah, so one person from California where they have a county administered system said the practices are just not implemented consistently across all of the counties there. Thank you, very good. Okay, I have another question. Thanks, Jeremy, for that poll question. This question is, who do you think should be involved to ensure child welfare redesign efforts are inclusive of tribal perspectives and solutions? So who are the people, the organizations, what entities that should be involved to ensure child welfare redesign is inclusive of tribal perspectives and solutions? First, right out of the bat, tribes decide. Thank you. Tribes. Families, I see families, children, youth, tribes, kin, elders, youth who are in the system, judges, tribal social service agencies, those who have had children taken away, elders, councils, tribal liaisons, tribal leaders, medicine people, wraparound services, so physical, mental health, education, support, those all need to be considered. Okay, we also reunify, so tribes are reunified families, yes? Inclusive of all tribes, former foster youth, birth families, tribal community members, members of the tribe. And it talks about Native people being involved, regardless of whether one person, regardless of whether they're actually living on tribal lands or they might be living off tribal lands, maybe in an urban area. We'll need community talking circles, understand the nuances of all of this work, this effort. Yeah, it's one person says, curious that many of the reform efforts are being led by policy leaders and academics. That's right. That's kind of where, and each of those, even just within those groups, they have real different experiences and sometimes really different ideas about what where the direction should be. Do you think we should have tribal researchers involved? Do we need more data? Would that be helpful? Carefully, okay. One of the things that we see is sometimes a lot of the data that we're getting is not the actually Native children families, data that describes their experience, whether it's research literature or data from federal systems is often really hard to get to, and in many cases not even existent. But I see tribally driven researcher, in research from an indigenous perspective, exactly. Good. Yeah, so the issues need to be, one person said issues need to be addressed at a higher level. Local level sometimes doesn't work. And then the research overseen by academics often fails to understand or document the Native experience. Maybe those stories and that information could be helpful to other families. I think I saw something like that. Yeah, not collegiate thought, but represent Native numbers. So you have to be in control of the information. Excellent. Okay, I've got one last question. Oh, collecting data from oral tradition. Another. Okay, and then who owns the data? Who does own the data? Who should own the data? If it's data from the experiences of Native people, who should own it? The people, yeah. Policymakers are too often far from the proximity of issues. And a lot of people's chiming in to say, that's the issue, the ownership. The ownership of the data, yeah, the information, right? We know how information has been used in some cases in the past against Native people. So it's Native history, it's Native people own it. So my last question to you is about what kind of information or support do you need to help participate in these redesigned discussions or advocacy? And we're thinking about what, and I'm thinking about this because NICWA, we want to understand more about how we should be approaching this work too. So it doesn't necessarily mean that what you need is something that NICWA has to provide to you. You may not need us to help you do that. But we're thinking about what our role should be. As we've already said, started to be involved in listening to some of the discussions in this area with different groups. We would like to know more about what is it that you need. You're the folks on the ground to help you be part of this discussion or advocacy. So if you could write that into the chat box, tell us what you need to be more, to have more information about here. To be able to participate more, excuse me. more communication with tribal reps and feedback on their thoughts. So more regular communication, okay? What the implications are, and just to be invited. What barriers families are facing. Need to know more about how families are experiencing this. Data on trends. We need court access to cultural, better internet access in rural Alaska. A broad coalition have shown interest in children's welfare and specific children's issues. Okay. Funding specific Native research. More funding for that. More input from the grassroots. More communication with them. Partnering with different groups. Our present support is through our tribal coalition here in California and our Office of Tribal Affairs. All right, we have one last poll. And I'd ask Jeremy to put the poll up. Thank you for your responses there, very helpful. And this question is a little bit related to the last question, but it's more about the process. So how would you like to be engaged on this topic in the future? So thinking about what are the ways that you get information, what's most effective for you? And you can pick more than one of these. So go ahead and write down the ones that you like the most. What helps you the most? Seeing a lot of people talking about both national and regional webinars, listening sessions. A number of people also chiming in on written materials, electronic surveys, our website. You know, quite a few people saying the website is another way of getting information, as well as NICWA e-bulletins or email alerts, regular email alerts. The smallest proportion seems to be through social media. One person says she likes fact sheets. She likes to have fact sheets or briefing papers. Yeah, legislative updates, regional and national webinars. There you go. One of the challenges, of course, is virtual meetings are more difficult to have that kind of real, obviously can't have face-to-face, but it's a little harder. But we're working on trying to find ways that we can actually promote more breakouts in our training institutes. We've been able to, with smaller groups under 40, we've been able to do breakout groups and so people can talk to each other a little bit more. Listening sessions with people who lived experience. Some people saying they like this listening session, very informative. It looks like we've got, we have almost all of our, Jeremy, we have almost all of the people there listed. Looks like the top three were the listening sessions, the regional and national listening sessions. And then written materials, electronic surveys, and then close to that was NICWA e-bulletins and website. So that's good to know. You know, we put a lot of information out through our social media accounts, Facebook, Instagram, but it looks like people are, you know, wanting to gather. That's the number one. They want to have sessions like this where they can communicate with each other. And then other than that, they like materials that maybe go up more traditionally on, like on our website, through email alerts, things like that. That's great. Thank you. Jeremy, is that the end of, is the poll closed now? Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been excellent for us. This is, I hope you found this informative. This is our first attempt to be able to have this kind of conversation with you. And as we said, this will not be our last conversation. So we'll be taking this to our board and having a more in-depth conversation about how we respond to what you provided. And I want to thank you because I know everybody, I'm sure every single person on here realizes how important this work is. All of you have been working at it in your own different ways for a long time. And I want to close just by allowing President Vigil to say a few closing remarks before we sign off.
Thank you, David, and thank you all of you that participated. I think this is good information that we can utilize as an organization, because some of the comments that you were making on the chat or in the process are things that are happening in our local communities, the colonization that's going on, all those programs that are available, too much bureaucracy, certainly cultural tradition and families important. And so I want to thank you for your participation, and hopefully that we can continue this dialogue in the future. And hopefully one day that we can come face to face again and meet in person to do this work, because it is for our children that we're doing this work. And so I want to wish you well, be safe, and let the spirits guide you and assist you in your work. And we're here at NICWA to help and assist you also. So thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your week. Thank you so much.